Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Mark Billingham, and welcome to A Stab in the Dark, the UK TV crime podcast that invites some of the biggest names from the worlds of crime fiction and TV crime drama to come down to the station for a nice cup of tea and an intimate grilling. Now, we've talked to some real heavyweights from the genre on the podcast in the past, everyone from Ian Rankin, Patricia Cornwell, Lee Child and Val McDermid, to David Morrissey, Sherilyn Fenn and Mark Gatiss, who all gave us valuable insights into their craft. And we're not stopping now. Oh, dearie me, no. Now, regular listeners will know that every once in a while we like to let our producer and our man with the spyglass, Paul Hirons, out of our dark incident room and into the big wide world. So I'm going to hand over to Paul, who recently went to meet Sophia Helene, star of fantastic Scandi Noir The Bridge, on her promotional tour of the UK. We're very excited about this. So, Paul, it's over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. Yes, I'm here with Sophia Helene, the fantastic star of The Bridge. Sophia, welcome to the podcast. It's great to see you, and thanks for spending the time with us this morning.
Thank you.
Now, we are sadly at the end of this extraordinary series. And I read that you and your co-star, Ture Lindhardt, each received a hammock for your summer houses as a gift. Is that right?
Yeah, it's true.
Wow.
He's got a blue one and I got a white one. And we send each other pictures hanging in that during the summer.
So why a hammock then, do you think?
I think the production knew that we both bought each other or ourselves a summer house. I bought one on the little island outside Stockholm and he bought one outside Copenhagen.
So these are perfect for this.
Perfect.
You Nordic people, this is something I really admire. I've been lucky enough to spend some time in Finland and Norway and Denmark. Not Sweden yet, though. That's on my list. You just have the best lifestyle. It's all summer houses and lakes and all that kind of stuff. I know that's probably not true all year round with the darkness and the snow. But how does Sophia Helene and her family spend midsummer, for instance?
Yeah, now since we have this little summer house, we are at our summer house with friends, and it's in a little village on an island, and there is a big midsummer feast, and we're dancing around the, you know, the thing.
The pole thing.
Flowers and things, and we are making a song called Little Frogs.
And there's probably sauna, and there's probably grilled fish, and there's beer, and there's strawberries from the first strawberries of the summer.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds brilliant.
It is lovely. I mean, we live for the summers.
Yes.
That's what we're all looking forward for. And we are, our vacation in the summer is also very long.
Right.
Yeah. So it tends to be like the whole Sweden just stops in the summer.
You really make the most of it, right?
Yeah, we try to. But then in the wintertime, it is like a bit like The Bridge, actually.
Okay.
Really dark and grey and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a point to me asking that question, not just because of hammocks and summer and all that, although it sounds amazing. Saga seems like quite a demanding role, and I'm interested how you unprocess or kind of unwind after each series. Is that just kind of spending time with your family and taking a break? Are you good at kind of distancing yourself from roles, or with Saga, is that someone that kind of gets under your skin a little bit? I'm interested.
Yeah, she gets under my skin also because it's such. I mean, I we've done 38 hours with her, so of course she gets under my skin, and it's very demanding to be her because she's very fast. She thinks very fast, and she's very unlike me. So I have to think in a completely different way. And then I used to describe it as wearing a cement costume.
Right.
Because it's like the pressure on my body is really, really strong. So afterward, I feel like, you know, like a balloon going up to the air a little bit.
I mean, I wanted to ask you about that because I think I saw an interview on a previous launch a few years back. Where you were talking about the kind of physical transformation that you have to go under when you become Saga, because she wears these big heavy leather trousers, the big coat, and it's almost kind of quite a masculine way of walking. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you prepare and how that came about, actually?
Yeah.
The look and the feel of Saga.
Yeah, I quite early on in the process, I had the sense that I'm not going to move my hips a lot.
Right.
So I started walking like that.
Yeah.
I tried that. And then I've been exercising by walking or running while doing the lines in order to get the speed into my body. Yeah.
So it's getting speed into your body.
Or into the language and, you know, to the way of thinking and moving the eyes like this really fast. Because I think I'm more of a floating person.
Right.
From who I am.
Yeah.
So it's also a matter of discipline and efficiency. And it's like going into a kind of a tunnel having a goal to go to.
And you mentioned that it's almost with Saga, there's not only an economy of language, there's an economy of movement as well, as you say.
Yeah.
Is that kind of emotionally draining? You have to teach yourself to kind of act and respond to people in that way. How difficult was that when you first started?
Yeah, it was really difficult to begin with because acting is so much about receiving and giving all the time. And this is the person who cannot give and receive. So we started trying out with her not able to look people in the eyes. But then we figured that's too difficult because people want to look in the eyes. So then we thought maybe she really tries to look people in the eyes very, very hard. So she's doing a bit too much of that. So to begin with, it was very hard to get into her way of thinking. But then when I turned everything back upside down and inside out, it was suddenly very clear and easy.
Yeah, and as you say though, acting is kind of all about giving.
Yeah, giving,
projecting, and yet Saga is, you know, very almost blank. Almost.
Yeah, so it was hard to begin with since I realized I cannot give anything or receive anything as an actor, and I felt very rude to my colleagues. But then lovely Kim Bodnia, he started laughing at Saga, and that really helped. But it's been a journey to comfort the people who are coming into the show to just do one or two days and to give them courage to play against a person who doesn't give anything.
Yeah. How do they find that then? If they come in just for one or two days, they're used to different jobs and, you know, acting, as you say, it's all about the relationship between two actors. And then they meet Saga and nothing. You know, does it freak them out?
Yeah, a bit. They get insecure.
Right.
It's like I'm playing two parts on set. The nice and welcoming colleague and then Saga.
Yeah.
So it's a responsibility that I have to think about. And sometimes it's hard for them not to laugh also because it is absurd with her sometimes.
Well, that's it, because there is quite a lot of comedy in The Bridge. But let's face it, Saga has a version of autism, or it's never been kind of explicitly revealed, has it? But she shows the traits of, say, autism or Asperger's or something around in that area. Was that kind of quite difficult to get your head around to begin with when you first read the character?
Yeah.
Was that quite difficult?
It was, and I was annoyed with her and irritated, and I couldn't get into her world. But through, as I said, thinking the other way around, and then it was actually helpful that I couldn't understand Danish to begin with. So when the director Charlotte Seeling and Kim Bodnia was talking, I was like behind a glass wall, and that was so helpful because I could see something was going on between them, and I didn't get it. And that's the way her everyday life is.
And that it was such a beautiful relationship between Saga and Martin. I know you guys hate talking about Martin and what happened to Kim. Oh, really? Okay.
No.
But there was such a great rapport. But the characters were great. They were polar opposites, weren't they? So, and that would, because Saga almost failed to understand Martin's emotion about things. When he cried, she was like, why are you doing that? You know. So there was such a lovely kind of relationship between you guys. How long did it take to kind of form a character when she has these different affectations? You must have worked very hard on her personality and getting into it. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. I studied people with Asperger's. I went out to try to be like her and see the way other people reacted.
That's interesting.
To me.
What, just kind of down the street or in the shops,
just
or
shopping or just
regular day-to-day stuff? Yeah, yeah.
So what happens is that you get very lonely, and I quite quickly realized that she lacks love in her life. So that became my goal for her, to have, how can she get love?
Yeah.
But what I realized is that other people, when you don't confirm that, I mean, when you and me talk, I nod a little bit. I send you like...
Yeah, we smile, we nod, we have these little conversational things, don't we?
Yeah, and we don't think about that because it's normal. But when you don't have it at all, you get uninterested of the other person, or insecure or uncomfortable. So people just look the other way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what we kind of love about, and that's what we want desperately for Saga to pull through. I think that's what really attracts people to the bridge and the character. You desperately want her to succeed because you want her to find love. You want her to make friends somehow, anyway. So I think the bridge has been almost like a rites of passage for Saga, you know. But we'll come on to that in a bit. So with all that in mind, it's hard. I'm sure you've got mixed feelings about leaving Saga behind, although she's probably still in here. I'm kind of patting my chest and my heart at the moment. Did you take much persuading to come back for this fourth series?
Not much.
No?
No. When they presented the theme, that is identity, and I guess they know me, so they know that's my main interest in life. I wasn't completely, I wanted to do it.
Yeah. And I mean, and obviously the story must have been important, but it was that theme of identity. And we've just been talking off mic. I was lucky enough to go to the screening of the first episode last night, and things have almost, Henrik and Saga have been kind of almost stripped away of everything. Henrik, his family, which we saw in season 3. And now Saga, I'm not sure how much to say in this without giving too much away, but we see Saga in a very unusual situation.
Yeah.
Where she's finding it difficult to cope because she's not got her kind of usual stuff around her. Things can't be ordered like she likes. So it's almost kind of stripping everything away and starting again. Would that be right?
Yeah, her whole identity is taken away from her.
Yeah.
So she doesn't know who she is, why she lives, what's the meaning of anything, and she's just completely lost in life.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting.
And again, her vulnerability kind of makes her just want to give her a big cuddle. And kind of, although I'm sure she'd hate that.
Yeah, she'd hate it. Yeah.
So what can you say about this fourth series? We know that it's going to be about identity.
Yeah.
About finding who I mean, there's some big questions in this series I've been reading.
Yeah.
And certainly the first episode seems to suggest that you'll be exploring some really kind of meaty issues about kind of oneself. What can you say, though, about the fourth series? That all that kind of stuff is underlying, but there is a kind of a procedural investigating case that you guys are undertaking, aren't you?
Yes, of course, there's a very exciting and terrifying crime plot during the whole season. But the overall identity theme also, it works on a bigger level as a society. Can we say that someone can be in, someone can be out? That very big question that we are struggling with at the moment in Sweden, in Denmark, in Europe, in the world.
Yeah.
Because we try to keep people out.
Yeah.
And saying it's them and us.
And the bridge itself, the Orison Bridge, have I pronounced that correctly?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of brought two nations together.
Yeah.
But I understand there are kind of border checks and things like that now. So it's kind of, even the dynamic of the bridge itself has changed over these kind of years. Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really a sad story. When we started, the bridge was something that united us, that made us feel very close to the continent and gave us possibilities to join. And it felt like the region was growing together. But now, since 2015, the border is closed and you have to show your passport while going into Sweden, and also the different ways of coping with the refugee situation has torn our countries apart a bit.
Yeah.
So it's very sad and tensed as it is in the world.
So once again, the bridge, as you say, has this exciting kind of whodunit, kind of serial killer murder thing going
on,
which we will get very addicted to. Yeah. Want to find out who did it. But it's got Hans Rosenfeld loves what he calls the second story, right? The kind of social commentary. So so that's here in this series as well.
And it's also a bit, I'm most proud of this season.
Really?
The fourth season. Because it's also so much about the characters and their relationships.
Mm.
And that's what interests me as an actor, of course.
I'm interested, as I say, I went to the screening last night and it was a packed auditorium. You got a fantastic response from people. When you go to different territories, when you launch the show, like say to Germany, Spain, England, wherever, do you still have to kind of pinch yourself to remind yourself that you're not dreaming? This is a global phenomenon, I would say, and it's inspired different countries to launch their versions as well. Do you still have to kind of think, oh, this is actually real, it's happening?
Yeah, I do. I tend to forget, and then I realize, oh my, is this really true? And then I said to someone yesterday, it's like when you think about your children's, when they were small, you have the feeling that, oh, was I really present? Was I really there when all this happened? And because now it's soon going to be gone.
Yeah.
That feeling.
Yeah. So it must be amazing. Do you get people coming up to you telling you how much they love you and the show? That must be quite overwhelming as well, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, in Sweden, it's very easy to be known because people tend to be very cool about famous people. But it's a little bit different in other countries. But what really makes me so happy is when someone with Asperger's comes up to me and talk with me.
Right.
And that happens quite often. And yesterday I had a very beautiful meeting with a woman.
In London here?
Yeah, after the screening. She came up to me and she said, thanks through the bridge, I realized I suffer from Asperger's. So I got my diagnosis just this spring.
Wow.
And you are the fourth person in the world who knows about this. And I'm just so grateful.
So they share really personal info. Did that make you cry?
I just wanted to say, disappear all of you. We have to talk for
an
hour.
It's me and her, Dan.
And I've had several of those kind of meetings, and that makes me so happy.
Yeah, aside from doing fantastic work in the acting sense and being that personal response must be incredible, right? And it must make it all worthwhile in a way. All the the leather trousers and the walking yeah. around in cement and all the rest of it, you know. But that proves, doesn't it? I mean, we've spoken on this podcast about the success of Nordic noir, so-called Nordic noir, in this country specifically. And I'm not going to ask you that again because I know that you've answered that a lot in the past. But specifically to the bridge, why is that? Do you ever kind of sit and think, why was that so popular? Do you ever think that? No.
Of course. I think about that. A lot. You mean the bridge? Why the bridge?
Bridge specifically?
Yeah, I have different answers to that question. Some theories about it. One is that it was delayed, so the production built it really up a world that was an aesthetic world that was really something new and something interesting and dark and, you know, a world to go into. And then also, it's so plot-driven, even though the characters are so complex and interesting.
Yeah.
And the chemistry between the main characters. And I think the humor.
Yeah.
That is a bit humor within all this darkness.
Yes.
All that mixture makes it maybe appealing to people. But also, I think that the characters are written and acted with the aim of getting love.
Right.
And with the very big loneliness, especially for Saga and Henrik, they are very lonely people. And that's something you can relate to.
Yeah.
You start to love people who share their vulnerability and loneliness.
And you want them to succeed, right?
Yeah.
Especially with Saga, you're, come on, please find... You don't have to go to nightclubs just to sleep with guys and whatever. You know what I mean? Just we want you to find love. We want you to understand or make that step, that big step of opening up to someone because you will be loved. You know what I mean? I think that's the key with Saga.
Mm.
But we are at the end and it's kind of sad to say it.
Yeah.
But you've been living with this character for a decade and we've talked about it a little bit. I'm interested, what did you, and again, you spoke about it a little bit, what did you think of Saga when you first read her on page all those years ago? And what do you think of her now?
Yeah, that's interesting. I was very suspicious to begin with. I thought they were just trying to do another Salander copy or what do they want by this character?
Lisbeth Salander,
exactly. Yeah. Which is brilliant and good, and you shouldn't try to repeat something like that. But so I was suspicious, very suspicious for a long time. And then I started meeting with Hans, the director, Charlotte Seeling, and Kim Bodnia, and I fell in love with the project.
And I guess saying goodbye to a character is difficult, especially... So, just going back to that, do you like Saga more? You understand her now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I understand her so much more. And I realized I meet people in a different way now than I did before I started doing Saga.
Right. That's interesting. Because you're an experienced actress and you've done some fantastic stuff before and after or during the bridge, you know, in between. And no doubt you'll go on to be... you know, do some fantastic projects as well. But do you think Saga will really stay with you?
Yeah, of course, since it has had such an impact.
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to stay with me. And I also noticed when I've had time to do some things in between, it was a bit hard to get into that acting style. Out of that acting style to do other parts because when you do it so much it can really like affect the work
and it's interesting, isn't it, when an actor leaves a character they play for so long kind of behind. I had the good fortune of interviewing Brenda Blethyn once, who plays Vera over here, and she's been doing this, you know, she's been playing Vera for a long time as well, and she said to me that when she goes shopping she sees clothes, not for her, but she thinks, oh, Vera would like that.
Yeah.
Do you get that slight crossover between you and Saga? And do you think, does Saga pop into your head and occasionally, maybe in your social situation, you think, what would Saga say here? Do you get that at all?
Oh, yeah, I use her when I have situations complicated emotional situations. I try to use her way of analyzing and being very concrete about things. That's so helpful.
Yeah.
It's really an advice.
To
take a step back and just think about it rationally for just a couple of minutes.
So finally, Sophia, actually, no, one more thing after this, but I have to ask, do you have any favourite... I hate asking this question, and it's a nightmare question to answer, but do you have any favourite saga moments throughout the four series? You mentioned one.
Yeah, the very last scene with Henrik was lovely.
Yeah,
it was lovely. And then I have some very funny moments that I like. That is my kind of humour. She has her new mother-in-law sleeping over and she's masturbating. I think that's just very funny.
Yes, we should end it there, really. But I've got one more favour to ask, and you don't have to do this if you don't want to. But one, I love Saga's little character affectations, you know, the kind of little darts of the eyes, little turn of the lip, or the way she answers her telephone is fantastic.
Mm.
Would you mind saying that one more time for British listeners?
With pleasure.
Okay, shall I do the phone noise?
Okay. Brr, brr. Saga Norén, Länskrim, Malmö.
I think that's the perfect time to end it.
Thank you.
Sophia Helén, thank you very much for joining us. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for me as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Amazing stuff from Sophia there. And trust me, we will be trying to hunt down an original recording of Sophia singing that frog song. But in the meantime, we can't wait to see the final series of The Bridge, which starts on Friday, the 11th of May, on BBC Two. I'll be back next week, where I'll be talking to award-winning Irish author John Connolly. In the meantime, you can find out more about A Stab in the Dark, along with articles, at uktv.co.uk/astabinthedark, or you can get in touch with us on Twitter. Our hashtag is astabinthedark. Oh, and don't forget to rate and review us on your podcast app. Your feedback really does make a difference, so if you like the show, please say nice things about us. If you've only got nasty things to say, keep them to yourself. Oh, and just a quick reminder, you can watch the best crime drama every day on UKTV channels Alibi and Drama. My name's Mark Billingham, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.